Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Hello, everyone. I have one word. Burr. Yes, that's a word. Is that a word, burr? I don't know.
How many R's?
a lot of R's. Yeah. Just a lot of R's. Yep. We have an interesting show tonight. We have John DeCoste is joining me, who is a very funny man, and we're going to be talking about news stories in and out of the news this week and legal questions. If anyone has legal questions, we're going to take them all throughout the show for 2 hours. So if you have legal questions or comments, maybe on some news stories that you've read that you're concerned about or that you have questions about, just give us a call here, 981-7200. I'm just going to bring John on now. Hey, John, how are you?
Hello. How are you, Karen?
We've never done a show together.
I don't think we... you have been on Steve's show a couple of times.
I have.
I think we wrote a song together.
We wrote a song together, and I like to write my political parodies, and you're kind enough to sing them, because if I sang them, they would be funny, not for the words, but for me singing. So
that's funny. That's exactly where they laugh at mine. That's weird that you would bring that up. So, yes.
So, well, welcome. And, you know, I guess I want to just ask you, like, how, you know, you're a stand-up comic, and you know I come from a background where my father was a stand-up comic, and I just find it interesting to study how comedy has changed, especially in the days now where we have such political correctness and people so offended by things. Can you tell me, like, are there certain things that you can do now that you maybe couldn't do 25 years ago, and certain things that you can't do that you could do? Is it changed as much as I think it has?
I think it definitely has changed. I don't think it's about what you can do now that you could, you know, that's different, because it's really... so much has changed. You can't do so many things. Now, there are comedians who will do anything at any time, and it doesn't matter. And that's just what, and that's the people gravitate towards them, that they like that. I have always been very, very, no issues. I don't want to offend anybody, you know, anything like that. So I play it pretty straight for 36 years now. And, you know, it's funny, you did bring up the fact that your history there. And for anybody listening, we were talking about your, you know, your father, Joe. And I just sent you a photo not that long ago from his album.
Right.
Which... how many albums did he have?
He only did one album, and okay. It was filmed back in the late 50s or early 60s at a place called Mangum Chateau, which was a place in Lyons, Illinois. It was a swanky nightclub. They had probably three shows during Fridays and Saturdays. My father was a headliner, so he introduced all guests. They would occasionally have magicians. They'd have singers. They'd have a line of girls who would dance. And my dad worked there for years and years and years. It was probably the only real steady... job he had.
Oh, sure,
and,
sure.
And it was filmed, it was taped there, and it's all the old one-liners.
That's how I got my start. I was actually one of the girls that danced with Joe. That's how I first met Joe.
It's all about cleavage.
It is about cleavage, and thank God I have plenty of that. So I was very pleased about that. No, but that, how great was that, that I saw that album? And you know, I think about that because... I worked with your father. I actually worked with him at Wacko's in Berwyn.
Berwyn, yes.
And just, you know, it's one of those things. I'm a big throwback, so it was quite a pleasure and definitely an honor. And I'm not kidding, to work with him. And he was, I hope he was a nice dad, because he was super nice to me.
Super nice. So, the nicest guy. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people in show business, as you know, who are not the nicest people, or they're insecure, or they're petty and selfish and stealing jokes. My dad was always the person who would help a young comic and say, hey, why don't we work on this, and maybe you can use this. And he was always very good, because, you know, he went through a lot. I mean, he started out as a child actor in Hollywood when he was very young, and he was in a movie called East of the River with John Garfield, and then he became one of the Dead End Kids, which then became the Bowery Boys.
Yes.
And he was not one of the big ones. He was kind of a peripheral character that was in probably three or four or five of the serials, and so that's how he really got his start. And he was a tap dancer, and so he sang and tap danced, and that sort of just moved into the whole comedy thing. But he, going back to being clean or doing risky things, you know, my father back in the day, 50s, 60s, 70s, you couldn't work if you were going to be doing off-color things. I mean, if you... you certainly couldn't work a convention
right.
or a bar mitzvah
right.
or something like that. You had to keep it very clean and keep it very, you know, no ethnic jokes, no real racy sexual jokes.
Yep.
And that's how you kept a job is you appeal to everybody.
You know, and it's not that different today because the fact that I'm able to do corporate work and theater work and stand-up clubs. And here's the thing, your father, I remember what he told me, and I did not think of it as that big of a deal at the time, but he pulled me aside at Wacko's and he said, "You," and I closed, I was headlining, he goes, "Hey, I really like that you were not blue meaning dirty at all, and I don't. I'm very clean in my set, and I didn't think that was that big of a deal. That's just what I do. But today, that's why I'm able to do everything and anything because I'm clean. However, the people that you see skyrocket and get on, you know, TV shows and stuff like this or getting specials on Netflix, guys that I love and I think are very funny and women too, but they can be very blue and they can be very, and they just skip the line and go because
right.
they don't care about the corporate. They don't care about that. It's just it's a different time. You know, did your father write his own material, or
he wrote some of it, and he would, you know, alter certain things. I mean, he had been in the business for so long that, you know, there's no such thing as a new joke, just a new audience, right? So
correct.
He would take
that's
an
true.
Old joke from vaudeville, you know, back in the, he entertained the troops in World War II. He was in Special Forces, where he went all over the world with a group of people who were saxophone players and a female impersonator and dancers and singers, and they put on shows for the troops. And so he had such a depth of knowledge of jokes and old jokes, and so he could retool them. So to say that he actually wrote them, he probably didn't. He just changed them. But he did have back in the day, they had newsletters that you could subscribe to that would have topical lines.
Oh, sure.
Orban was the big one, and a lot of the comics got his lines, and then they retooled those as well. So it was you know, he had so many jokes that even in a given act, you probably wouldn't have to repeat them if you didn't want to. Yeah.
Well, and he was probably a force because they would have the same audience all the time. They may not leave, or they, you know, we get one show, they everybody leaves, we come back, we can do the same set.
Right.
You know, or I travel to another town and they don't know, you know, from day to day. But it's funny when I work with your dad, and I work with him, I think probably five times is what I remember. And when I work with him, I remember a younger comedian kind of scoffing at him because he's this one-liner guy and what a throwback. And yet, he did really well. The audience really laughed at your dad. Joe did really well. And it's like, how can you not... Come on.
Well, you see an old guy up there and you think, what's this guy going to do? But, you know, he'd been doing it for 40 years by the time you met him. So he was a professional. I mean, you know, this is what he did, is he put food on the table. I mean,
right.
do I look like I'm undernourished? I mean, really, you know. So yeah, there was longevity there. And someone asked, what's his name? I love John DeCast. Someone says then, I love John DeCast.
Oh, that's
my dad's name was Joe Conti.
Joe Conti,
and,
yes.
I was going to say Richard Pryor, but I guess that wouldn't be funny.
Yes, it would.
Yes, it would. Okay.
Come on.
I know. You never know what
you got it.
Anyway, we're talking about, we're going to talk about the cold. You know, John and I are going to do some dueling how cold is it jokes. If
that
anyone has
fun.
any tips for surviving the cold or any little tricks that you have for staying warm, give us a call here. We want to talk about it. Or if you have any funny how cold is it jokes, give us a call. 981-7200.
Were you suddenly aware that the autumn leaves were turning to the color of her hair? Like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever spinning reel.
Name that tune. Name that tune. I bet Ben, our young producer, doesn't know that song. No, he doesn't.
I don't think he knows the artist.
Thomas Crown Affair.
That's right. Ooh, that song is Windmills of Your Mind. That was in honor of the death of Michel Legrand, who was one of the great composers. He wrote beautiful, beautiful songs, and he won the Academy Award, I believe it was 1999, for the best song in the Thomas Crown Affair.
Actually, wouldn't that be the original movie, the Thomas Crown Affair in 68, or no?
I don't know. I do remember that Frank Sinatra gave out that award. Can someone check that for me? Because, right, it was remade.
68, it was done with Steve McQueen. and Faye Dunaway, and then remade with Pierce Brosnan and...
Yeah, he did win for the original.
Okay. The original, yeah. So that was 68. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And another great one that he was nominated for, and I think he actually won... was also Summer of 42.
Right.
Oh.
Right. And wait, can you play the other one, Ben? The other one was it was in the movie called Best Friends, but the song was a beautiful song. How do we keep the music? What is it? How do we stop the music from playing?
Yeah.
How do we keep the music from playing?
I know the artist.
Yeah. Who's the artist?
James Ingram and Patty Austin.
That's correct.
How about that?
That is correct.
And Tony Bennett did an awesome rendition of that song.
Yes.
How do you keep the music? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
beautiful.
Right. That's
yeah.
Right.
He was 86 years old, wrote some beautiful, beautiful songs. They don't write them like that anymore,
no.
Do they?
No.
Do you remember Carol Burnett Show?
Oh, sure.
Okay, one of my favorite shows of all time. But when they had the Eunice and that whole Southern thing?
Oh, the
thing,
family?
Do you remember
family,
when yeah. She's talked about, you've got splinters in the windmills of your mind?
Yes, right. That was
a phrase I used for years and years.
And I think,
after that.
If I'm not mistaken, those were outtakes because she kept changing that line.
Right.
And kept
right.
Throwing her, you've got splinters in the windmills of your mind, Eunice. That's so good.
And they would crack each other up, right. Which was the funniest part of that show, as far as I'm concerned. No, so, and does anyone have any tips for staying warm, or are things you intend to do in order to combat this horrible cold we're having? I'd like to hear some creative ideas. 981-7200, because I sure don't. Well, I'm getting on an airplane to go to Florida on Wednesday, well, which is really a big if.
And let's be specific and say if.
Yeah.
You might be.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, and it's business too. So, I mean, I'm getting away at a very good time.
Yes.
The timing was good, but yeah, I'm just feeling like I don't know about getting off the ground.
It's supposed to be like -7 is a high.
Maybe even worse than that.
Oh,
yeah.
Lord.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you have, let's do some how cold is it jokes.
Sure. I'm up for that. That's fine.
Okay, you want to go first?
That's fine. It was so cold.
How cold was it?
I don't think we could get through this. I saw rabbits run up to coyotes just for their hot breath. That's how cold it is.
You know how cold it is?
Oh, Karen, how cold is it?
The zoo had to move the polar bears indoors.
Oh, God. That was better than mine. You
join
on
in.
That one.
Join
yes.
in, anyone. Yeah. If you think you can do better, 981-7200 or text. John?
Do you know how cold it was?
How cold was it?
I had to put salt on my inside steps. How about that? Take that, Karen.
So cold I saw an alderman with his hands in his own pockets.
Oh, that, see? That's two up you've won. I don't want to play this anymore.
Come
You're
on.
Good at
Come
this.
On.
Wow. It was so cold I took a shower today and it came out hail. Golly, I'm not winning.
Okay, it's so cold even the good humor man was in a bad mood.
Oh, see? That's good. That's three. Okay, I'm 0 for 3. How about this one? I'm so cold, I chipped my tooth on soup. Did I do the timing on that right?
I like that.
On soup?
You're the comedian.
Yeah.
I'm just the lawyer.
And
okay.
I'm losing here. I am losing here.
It was so cold today, the Amish are buying electric blankets.
Okay. Again. Oh, this is why you wanted to play, so that I lose. Okay, it was so cold, I had to eat my Jell-O with a spoon and a pick. Spoon and a pick.
It's so cold, I saw a gangsta on Lower Wacker pull his pants up.
You know, here's the difference. Mine are corny, yours actually are good. This is not fair.
One more and we're going to the phones.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, it's so cold, I went to church hoping the priest would talk about hell. How about that one?
I like it.
Okay.
Craig from, is it Bloomingdale?
Hey, yes, it is.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine and cold.
Yes.
It's so cold, my tears are freezing before I cry them.
Oh. Thank you for that. Thank you. That's funny.
That was good. That was good.
Do I win?
Yeah, there's nothing to win here.
Sorry.
Yeah, there's nothing to win at all. I got to put you on hold. Okay. So I got a little
echo.
I got an echo here.
It's so cold, cold, cold.
It's cold, cold, cold. What do I do, Ben?
Am I still on?
Oh, it's the phone line. Okay, can we drop it?
Hello?
How do I drop it? I'm dropping it.
Hello?
Oh. That I didn't hit it hard enough. I'm so cold my finger wouldn't drop the phone call.
Karen is so cold.
Thank you, Craig.
She couldn't hang up.
It's so cold, the trees are chopping themselves into firewood.
Oh, that's good. That's okay. Good. See, we only got one call for that.
We've got one more. I think we've got Stuart. Hi, Stuart.
Yeah.
Hi, Stuart. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. Do you have a cold joke for me?
Yes. You know how cold it is?
How cold is it?
It's so cold that my nipples are now registered lethal weapons.
Thank you for that.
So I,
oops.
I don't think we really needed to have him expound on that. Correct?
You know, no, we didn't. We did not want that. It's so cold that I didn't clean the house today. I just defrosted it.
Okay. It's so cold. I actually saw a walrus walk into Ace Hardware looking for extra insulation. I saw that. That's not even a joke. I saw that.
Okay, Mike, here you go. See if you can top us.
Hi.
Go ahead. Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Good.
It is so cold out here. I saw real Italians at Olive Garden.
Okay. That was good.
That was kind of good,
That was really good.
Good. Anything else from that side of the mic?
Yeah. It is so cold in New York, the Statue of Liberty puts a torch under her dress.
Wow.
Good job. Thank you very much.
That was really good.
Thank you very much.
I wish we were giving something away.
You know, John, it's so cold that hitchhikers were just showing pictures of their thumbs.
Oh, my God. Oh, it is so cold that I saw geese fly off with the pond. They actually flew off with the pond. They took it with them.
It's so cold that you have to kick a hole in the air just to get outside.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Who just called before?
That's Mike.
Mike? That was good. That was really good.
Good.
That was good.
So what do you do in this cold weather? Is there any tricks that you have? I mean, I don't dress for the weather very well, you know? I don't like wearing a hat because it messes up my hair. It's silly, isn't it?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, I don't care about that. So that's not in it. But I bought these earmuffs, which you've probably seen them when they go behind.
Yeah.
You know, would that affect you? Because your hair's short.
Right.
Would that
now
still...
Now it's short, yeah. No, it wouldn't affect it. I should just get some of those,
That makes the biggest difference is covering your ears for me.
Right.
And I actually bought, I think from Amazon, I bought like four different kinds. So my wife, Jackie, has them and I have them. So, you know, you could wear those.
I could wear those and it wouldn't mess up my hair. There's a lot of vanity going on.
Well, here's the thing I want to say. So I've done this many times, but... So I dress like radio dress, unless we're going to a luncheon or something like this. But you look impeccable. You look phenomenal. But you always do.
Well, here's the thing. I can't do a radio show unless I'm dressed and with makeup and hair. Because it's sort of like when I work at home. Like, I can't work at home if I'm just in my PJs or my sweatpants. I've got to actually put on, like, makeup because now I'm in a mode, you know?
Makes you more professional?
Yeah.
Is that what you... Okay.
Well,
okay.
At least I try.
Unless
okay.
you try. Okay.
All right. We got Taxi Driver from Chicago. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. Do you have a how cold is it joke?
Yeah, it's so cold the prisoners are begging for the electric chair.
Very good. Love it. Thank you so much. Oh, gosh. All right. Do we have to take a break now? It's so cold. We can. Or we can hold up. Do we have any more? Do you have any more good jokes?
It's so cold Britney Spears actually wore underwear. Yes, that's how cold it is.
Okay, celebrity stuff. It's so cold Richard Simmons is actually wearing pants.
Oh, that was good. That was, okay. See, I didn't even go that way. Okay. That's it's so cold, I had to use a blowtorch on my nose in order to sneeze. How about that?
Let's go to Craig. I think Craig was already on, but he's going to come back for an encore.
An encore?
Craig, what do you have for me?
Karen, this is my first time tonight.
Oh, it's your first time. Okay.
Do you know that it's so cold that the devil had to start a GoFundMe page?
These are really good.
Really good. Thank you, Craig. I like it. It's so cold that I can't even get into a heated argument with my husband.
Oh, dear. He's not paying attention.
He's not paying attention.
No.
Jerry's just trying to stay warm there. He's got his all bundled up.
I left the house, actually, it was so cold today, my wife and I had to push the house down the street in order to get the furnace started. We had to push it down the
street.
Yeah.
Okay, Elena. Elena, welcome to WGN. Do you have a joke for me?
I do have a joke.
Go ahead.
Okay. It's so cold, I saw chickens lined up outside of KFC waiting for their turn in the deep fryer.
That's good. That is good.
And on that low note,
yes.
On that low note, we are going to take a break.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
I'm hoping that you
so
dropped in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like mine.
It's not so bad when you hear that kind of singing, is it? Yeah, it's still bad. It's still really bad.
I just called HR.
You
so
called
I just
HR.
Want you to know. I just contacted HR.
Yeah, what that song is supposed to be inappropriate, but I don't really understand how it's any more inappropriate than, you know, Santa Baby or any of those other songs.
I totally agree. I don't. I think we've gone we've jumped the shark on this.
We are so sensitive to things, and you know, as Jerry has said over and over again, you know, comedy is kind of the last bastion of the truth, and things are funny because they're true, and
right.
There's some truth to all things that that make us laugh.
Karen, actually, the original version of that song in the movie.
Yes,
actually, the song is sung by two couples. The first couple is the man and the woman singing like what you just heard. In the other, Rudd Skeleton plays the man, and the roles are reversed. The woman is singing the lead to the man.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know that. That was a real fun fact. And I love Rudd Skeleton. He was great.
It was very fun to see the switch. And the video is on YouTube, as is every other video in the world. It was interesting when you watch that first one. And the first part of it, and then suddenly they switch to this other scene. So
interesting.
What was the movie? I'm just curious.
You know, off the top of my head right now, I can't remember.
Ben, Google it.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
When in doubt, delegate. You know, one of the things in life that I've become much better at, because when I was young, I had to do everything, was kind of control freak. Well, I still am kind of a little bit of a control freak. I guess I am.
Am I holding my pen? I just wanted
can
to
you
ask.
Move a little to the left?
Sure, okay. Not a problem, Karen.
I can delegate things to people. You know, I give them good directions, but I think I'd like to delegate, and Ben is going to do that for us.
You know, what's good is that I would immediately move and do it.
Yes.
Wouldn't even hesitate. It's like, I'm like, okay, Karen says, do, I do.
Okay, so, Ben, yeah. You have it?
Yeah. So the movie is Neptune's Daughter.
Oh. Neptune's Daughter.
Esther Williams. Yeah. Esther Williams.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. Does she swim in that?
I'm guessing. Might be. There had to be a pool someplace.
Interesting. Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate that. Hey, you know what? I want to talk about a news story that that I saw. I filed it under putrid passengers, and many of you may know where I'm going. A Michigan family was kicked off an American Airlines flight after 23 people, including some of the staff on the plane, complained about their body odor. They were going from Miami to Detroit, which is where they lived. The airline gave them hotel and accommodations and food and all of that and put them on a plane, I suppose, the next day. But they were very angry, and they said it was racist. I believe they were Jewish, and they were saying that it was done out of anti-Semitism. But what do you make of that? I mean, we've seen some of those stories before in different ways and shapes, but it's something where I wouldn't want to be the one telling someone that, right?
Well, and it's interesting because I think the father said, no one has ever told me that I smell, that I have an odor. And I'm sure no one has, because people don't do that. You know what I mean? I mean, and that's why I'm glad we're talking about this. I go to a grocery store by our house, and the bagger, we have a big issue.
Okay.
This bagger just reeks, and it's just body odor. It's
yes.
just this. So I have gone there. I try to avoid him, you know, in that lane or that aisle. But it finally took someone else to go. It was an elderly woman who just went nuts, and she goes, oh, and went off. And they had to talk to him.
Maybe you should have just gone to the little aisle where they have the right guard and put about 20 on the belt. And then when he bagged them, you could have said, hey, you know what? Why don't you just keep one? Because I have enough.
I've got
you
like
know, that
20.
Would have been subtle. That would have been really subtle.
Well, okay, but let me ask you this. Sister, can I go if I have a situation like that? Now, in this case, there were quite a few passengers who agreed that this was a problem. And I think they said they couldn't stand it for 15
right.
minutes, not 2.5 hours.
Well, right.
So if I think as a customer, I have a right to go to the manager and go, hey, I want to give you a heads up. This person has issues with body odor.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, I looked it up, and they're on almost every airline has a rule that says that if someone has a bad odor, that they can be taken off the plane. And you consent to that by buying a ticket with those provisions in it. So, okay. You know, you can't do it in a racist way. So you can't say someone from Africa who has a smell versus someone from Copenhagen has a smell. It has to be on the across the board, implemented in a way that's non-discriminatory. And the other thing is, interestingly, if it's because of a disability, a legitimate ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act disability, then you can't put them off the plane. So, for instance, like what could that be? Let's just say you had a colostomy bag and it broke.
Right, right.
Okay, that would be a horrible thing, but it's a disability, and because that smell emanated from someone because of the disability, you can't kick them off the plane. You would have to do some kind of accommodation. But regular old body odor, they absolutely have a legal right to do it, and I don't think they're going anywhere unless they can show for some reason that it was racist.
Does this come up a lot where they said that it was, you know, a race because they were their ethnicity or whatever, their, you know, isn't that,
it does. Well, you know, and
why is that the go-to thing?
Well, I think people, I think a couple of things, and you can weigh in too, but I think that people, like this guy, maybe no one ever told him about, you know, his body odor. So what is he going to say? He doesn't even know it. He doesn't smell it himself. He doesn't know. So it has to be something about the way he looks, you know. So he says it's racist because I may look like I'm Jewish or whatever. But I guess a lot of people, you know, too, if you look dark and you're on a plane and you're going through security and you get treated differently, this is the way we are in this society. And, you know, we if you look a little bit different, you know, you're going to get searched a little bit more strenuously.
Now, I was told that it was not mandatory that I shower for this show.
I didn't specify that. But I noticed that you're sitting back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, well, because of me. You know, I can't stand it. I don't know what you're doing, but I can't.
It's the worst. That's a terrible thing. It's a sad story.
Well,
you know.
And for the airline to do this, so what are the repercussions after this? The airline would not go ahead and remove them if it wasn't legit, correct?
23 people complained.
Yeah, that's
so,
a lot.
Yeah, this isn't one person just saying they don't like it. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've all been there, and it's unfortunate. But let me do this. We're going to take a break in a few minutes, but I want to talk about a story that I saw, the deadliest city for walking, the deadliest state in the union. If you are a pedestrian, where are you most likely to be killed in the whole country? And I want to know why you say this particular state. This and other questions we're going to ponder. And then at the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to take legal questions, 981-7200. Will you stay around and field the questions
with me? I will do whatever you need to
do. Okay, great.
Fine. It's cold outside.
It's cold outside. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. We're talking about very deep thoughts today. We're talking about being cold, and we're talking about putrid passengers on airplanes. And we have a putrid passenger story. Can you say that three times fast? Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to WGN. You have an airline story that you want to tell me about.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
I was down in Puerto Rico, and I had the non-refundable pass that I messed up. So I had to buy another ticket. And this guy in front of me, he's got a chihuahua in a cage that rolled in some poo, and he wanted to take it on as carry-on luggage, and, you know, while he's counting out his money, and, you know, it was change. You know, it's got dollar bills and, you know, change, and as she's giving him his ticket, I go, this guy's got a chihuahua. He wants to bring it on his carry-on luggage. She rolls over and smells it and that mess. And she goes, oh, no, no, that goes in the belly. And there was a big fight about that.
And who won?
The dog went in the belly.
Oh, well, that's a good ending.
She did not bring in that dog and carry on luggage. No way.
That's fine. That's good.
Anyway.
Thanks for the call. That's funny. I always wonder, like, what happens if you're allergic to dogs? I mean, I love dogs, and I'd love to sit next to a dog on a flight, because I would just play with the dog the whole time. But what if you're afraid of dogs or something? I don't know what you do. Hey, let's get back to this really important issue, which is the deadliest city for walking, the deadliest state in the union. Did you give this some thought, John? Because I don't think you've been thinking about this at all. I think you've just been thinking about being cold. what would be the logic? What state of the union would you think would have the most pedestrians killed by cars?
Right off the top of my head, I would guess. But it's the state. New York City itself.
See, you would think, right? You would think New York, wouldn't you?
Cars all over the place.
Cars all over, driving crazy, cab drivers running red lights, yes.
But then I'm also trying to think of a place where there was a resort area where everybody just walks anyways.
Yeah.
You know, like Florida.
You're getting warm.
You know, I'm getting warm, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
you guessed it, Florida.
Oh, is it Florida?
Yeah.
I didn't even look at this.
According to a study done by Smart Growth America, whatever that is, you are most likely to be struck and killed by a driver in the state of Florida, and specifically in the city of Orlando. In 10 years, there were 50,000 pedestrian deaths over the country. That's like about 13 a day. So there's a lot of people who are killed, not as just passengers in cars. We're talking about pedestrians hit by vehicles. And the question is, why would you have this situation in Florida? And they were saying that many times when they're planning roads that are very wide so they can move traffic. You know, so if you have a populated area that got populated very quickly, they want to build these big roads so people can move through. So you have lights that are very quick and you have wide roads, and some people can't get across in time, especially if you're older.
Yeah.
And guess what? You know, there's a lot of older people in Florida who retire and go there, so a lot of them can't necessarily walk across the street as quickly as they should. I would imagine, too, you have distracted drivers and distracted walkers, don't you think?
I would think so, but it's not like, again, going back to New York City, where, you know, if you're a tourist, and I assume there are quite a few in Orlando because they go there for, you know, Disney World.
Sure.
But they're not looking up at the sky like, oh, look how pretty it is. You know, they're just trying to get to a place. That's so, I would never have guessed Orlando.
Yeah, I don't know the reason on that one. But I don't know about you, but when you drive in the city or even walk in the city, you see people on their cell phones or texting, and they're not paying any attention at all. And I mean, and especially with the bikers now in the bike lanes, you know, you're not looking the other way, and you have to now really be even extra careful. I'm surprised there's not more accidents.
I totally agree with you. My wife makes fun of me because we will be at a store, say a Target, and I'll see the family walk out, and the mother and father in the front, and the three kids are looking at their cell phones, just strolling. Nobody's paying attention to anything. And I will honk. I will do that. I will actually honk, like, hey, let's go, you know? But you're right. Cell phones aren't that. Orlando has, they don't have cell phones here, do they?
I don't know.
I don't think they do.
I don't know, but when you're in Florida, beware. And I'm going down to Florida Wednesday, purportedly, as they say in the law. I am going to fly on Wednesday, and we'll see if I get off the ground on that very cold day. Let me talk about another topic that I saw on the internet. Bryan Cranston, who is really one of my favorite actors, he was the actor best known for his role in Breaking Bad, the lead role there. He's in a new movie called The Upside. It's a remake of a movie, but he plays a quadriplegic, and I guess he and his companion come up with some scheme or plot or whatever. I don't know the whole story, but he is being criticized for playing the role of a quadriplegic. And the idea is that there are plenty of quadriplegic actors out there who could have played this role and were not chosen. And so this is basically him taking a role that is taking it away from someone who's disabled. And the same arguments, John, you've seen these arguments.
Yep.
You can't play a gay person, you should get a gay person to play a gay person. Or you shouldn't, you know, have an Asian person played by a white person when there's plenty of Asian people out there.
Right.
Tell me, and if you guys have an opinion on this, I would like to hear it. 981-7200 or text me. Is there any validity to this argument that you should cast people who are legitimately a minority in a role to suit that minority? Is there any reason to do that?
You know, I go back to, I'm a huge Charlie Chan
Yes.
I just love Charlie Chan. Charlie Chan was played by three different actors. Actually, on TV makes it four. And all four actors, none of them were Asian. Mm-hmm. One was from Sweden, Sidney Toiler, and I'm trying to think of the other one just in America.
You're right.
You know, so it's amazing. Different time. But here's the thing. It's show business. There's nothing fair. If I'm going to produce this show and I'm putting this money into it and I want a great actor and I like Bryan Cranston, why shouldn't he play that role?
Well, he said that exact thing,
okay.
And he said it very blatantly. He said, listen, I'm a known entity, you know, and, you know, it is what it is. I mean, he's well known. He's made movies. He's been in this great show. He's an attraction. People are going to see the movie because of him, and this is a business decision.
Yep.
It may be that there are quadriplegic actors who are perfectly fine for the role, but he's going to be the draw, and the business producers need to be able to make a business decision in their own best interest without regard for what is that political correctness? I don't even know what you want to call that.
Yeah, that is a good question. But I agree with, yeah, it's a business decision, and that's the way it is. And I do understand, but I was trying to think off the top of my head, what are some of the, where are some of those situations where you wouldn't care? Or where it'd be like, oh, we better cast.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, where do we draw the line?
Where do we draw the line?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the other thing he said is, you know, listen, I am a wealthy man, right? Can I not play a poor man? I mean, where is the illogical extreme here? You know, we cast actors in roles that make them stretch. You know, Nicole Kidman can play an ugly person. Do we have to get an ugly person to play an ugly person? You know, it's just gets illogical. I suppose, you know, when you have a casting call for an African American, you shouldn't probably cast a white person in that role.
Well,
I mean, you know, that doesn't make much sense.
But go the opposite way. So there was a TV show called White Collar, USA, I think it was Matt Bonner.
Okay.
Okay, does that ring a bell?
Maybe
it was on for
bit.
Like six seasons, whatever. Matt Bonner plays a suave, debonair jewel thief who is good with the women. He's gay. He got that part. Should he not get that part because he was gay?
Right.
He's playing a straight man. So it goes the other way, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think, again, going back to our theme
right.
kind of here
yes.
about being sensitive and being overly sensitive to these things when there's so many other considerations. And listen, you've got to let people make business decisions. You just do. I'll tell the story. I told you off set. I had a young associate who was working for me, and I represented a woman who had an adult disabled child
right.
who was in her 30s. And under the Illinois law, you are entitled to get child support. Indefinitely from the father or the mother, whichever way you want to look at it, but you have to explain to the judge that the person is disabled. And so we were filing a motion, and this young woman had a lot of disabilities, and she had mental retardation, she was autistic, she had seizures, she had other medical issues, blood clots, she had just a lot of different issues that led her to have some support. And so I told my young associate, draft the motion and look at the medical records and tell the judge what's in the medical records so the judge knows how disabled she is so we can get support for this lady. And she kept coming back and it wasn't in there. And I said, why aren't you putting in there that she's mentally retarded? I mean, she's my associate at the time, a young associate, and I love her, she said, Karen, we don't use those words anymore. And I said, but in pleadings, we use what's in the medical record. If the doctor says she's mentally retarded, then we put that in a pleading so that the judge knows. I'm not going to make up words like she's challenged. I mean, I might say that in a polite conversation.
Correct. Right.
I might use different words than mental retardation. But certainly, if that's a medical term, I have to use it.
Right.
And my associate didn't want to even put it in there. So,
right.
I mean, I found that to be, you know, just a little, and I almost had to take her hands and put them on the computer and write it because she was refusing to do it. Let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim, up in Antioch. I bet it's colder up there.
Yep, and it hasn't started snowing yet.
Oh.
Tom Cruise gets picked on a lot. Did he get picked on for being in a wheelchair on Born on the 4th of July, playing a paralyzed veteran?
You know, you're right, and I think in the interview with Cranston, I think he did bring that up, if I'm not mistaken. And interestingly, did you see Breaking Bad?
Some.
Okay. Well, in Breaking Bad, he had a son who was disabled.
Oh, that's right.
Remember? Yes. And the kid was disabled.
He was legitimately disabled.
He was a really good little actor.
Really good, yes.
Really good little actor. So yeah, no, you have to go back and rewrite all of these roles, and you have to then rethink, why are these people being cast? I assume you think it's wrong, Jim, to require...
Well, I don't think it's wrong, because movies are made to make money, okay?
Yeah.
If 30 years ago, if Marlon Brando wanted to do that movie, who's not going to throw money at Marlon Brando? Put him in that same spot.
Right.
Tom Cruise made money at Brad Cranston. So I don't think it's wrong. But at the same time, you know, if you can earn your way into that top billing, then you should really be applauded for coming over that disability and such also, and making it big time.
You're right. Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it. I was just thinking, in The Godfather, you brought that up. Did Jimmy Caan, did he play, he was supposed to be Italian in that, right?
He was supposed to be Italian,
because
yes.
He never struck me as looking Italian,
no.
But he's Jewish, I guess. But yeah, I always thought to myself, like,
that's a really, yeah.
It was that was an interesting.
That's a good point. That's a really good one.
But it'd be kind of fun to go back to all the old, like, the Cowboys and Indians, like who they had play, quote, Indians.
Rock Hudson was an Indian in the 50s. I mean, you know, it gets ridiculous, you know, how, or they played a Latino or Mexican bandit, and they were none of those, you know, so.
Is there a role you wouldn't play? Because I know you do acting.
There's a role I wouldn't play?
Was there a role that you wouldn't play?
I turned on Mae West. I did turn that down. I was like, I'm close, but no cigar.
What was my favorite line? She said, she walked over, see, it's like, I picture her in a fur coat, and someone said, my goodness, what a beautiful fur coat. And she said, goodness had nothing to do with it.
Yes, that's good.
Goodness had nothing to do with it.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Those were the days.
But Gary Sinise was another one who played, you know, he played an amputee Tom Hanks in...
Oh, I'm Saving Private Ryan.
No. Forrest Gump. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's right.
And he played an amputee in that. So just, you know.
Yeah, I think this is illogical.
It does.
It's crazy. So, all right, here we go. We are now going to take legal calls for the next hour, 981-7200. And if you can't reach me here, or you want to talk in a more private setting, you can always call me at the office. I'm happy to take your call or give you some advice in the right direction. 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me, because then I can email you back right away. It's WGN@AskKarenConti.com, KarenConti, WGN@AskKarenConti.com.
You can put away your tissues, because here's the answer to your legal issues. 30 years experience in this town. Karen Conti wears the legal crown, and it's about to go down.
That's me. That's the rap. That's as cool as I get. So that's not very cool. But that's a client of mine who recorded that. He wrote it and recorded it. He insisted upon it. So, yeah.
That was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
I'm the musical director of the Steve Cochran Show, and I say that was pretty good.
I'm so not cool. Now this is the time that you can talk to somebody who's not cool, but I do have some experience as a lawyer, and either I can give you an answer or maybe even just give you some suggestions or send you in the right direction. Or maybe I'll just say I don't know and I'll have to call you back. But give us a call here or text us with your questions. You'll talk to Ben, you'll have a few minutes to kind of get your story out, and I'll try to give you my best answer. 312-981-7200. Text to 981-7200. Now, John, you told me that you wanted to kick this off with a question. This is your compensation.
You came all the way from Bensonville.
No, it's good.
So here's my question. We are going to be meeting either this Tuesday or a week from Tuesday with an attorney for my mother-in-law,
okay,
who is 93. All right. And I don't think she'll be mad that I just said that on the air. That'll be okay. But she does not have a will.
Okay.
So we are trying to decide whether it should be a will or a trust, and I don't know the difference. She does not own property. I don't know if that makes a difference. Okay. So can you explain the difference between advantage, disadvantage of either one?
Okay, and I can't say specifically because I don't know her situation. Okay. And I'm going to talk about two things. One is I'm going to talk about the will and trust. Then I'm going to talk about something called undue influence, and it's something that we need to watch in your situation.
Am I the undue influence?
You might be
an
undue.
I'm the guy?
Yes.
Okay.
So wills and trust, basically you don't want anything to go to probate, meaning you don't want it to go to court because that's when everything gets expensive and there's no need for it. So generally speaking, there's an estate plan, and the estate plan will have a trust that basically appoints a trustee. And so picture all of her assets go into this fake barrel called the trust.
Okay.
And she'll transfer, after she gets this trust, she will transfer all of her accounts into the name of the trust. So every checking account, if she has property, she doesn't have property, any assets she might have goes into the trust. So when she passes away, automatically the trustee will take those assets and will distribute them according to her wishes. So there's no need to go to court. There's no need for a judge to say, John gets this, Mary gets this. So it's probably the best way to do it. There's a pour-over will, which sometimes is used, and that can be explained by your lawyer, but that's just in case you didn't put everything into the trust. It's a fail-safe to make sure that everything gets distributed.
So it might be
that you have both.
Well, let me just clarify this. So that my wife, her daughter, will be the executor of her. That's what she has said. So is my wife then added on to, is that part of the trust that she's added on to these accounts?
It you could do that, and there's different ways to do it. You can actually have a survivor put onto your checking account. So it might say, you know, John DeCoste, survival, you know, Karen Conti, so that if you passed on, I automatically will get that account. So that doesn't even need to go through the trust or the probate. But those are all things you will ask the lawyer.
Perfect.
And you want to make sure that she has those questions ready to ask. Now here's an issue that you have to be careful of. 981-7200 if you have legal calls, and I've got some people calling, so just hold on. There's a thing called undue influence, and a lot of people in your situation where you say, this woman is 93, she needs to have an estate plan, I'm going to pick out a lawyer, I'm going to take her, I'm going to sit in with the lawyer. The problem is that you could be deemed to be unduly influencing her.
If,
let's just say, the mother-in-law leaves everything to your wife, and your wife was the one who picked the lawyer, who drove her there, who sat and gave her some, gave her some advice about how to do these things, and let's just say her sister is, you know, there's a sibling rivalry,
right,
and she wants to undo the will. Well, she could make an argument that all of those things constitute undue influence, especially at her age, which is 93. She may have been frail, maybe she wasn't as forceful as she could have been, and that could be a problem, and that could undo the entire thing. So again, people ask me, what do I do? I can't let my mother just go by herself. She's not going to find a lawyer. She won't find a good lawyer. Just be very careful. Give your mother-in-law several options, and maybe go there and sit in the waiting room, and don't go into the lawyer, because you don't want to be deemed to be unduly influencing. Tried those cases, and I have lost them and I've won them, but it's not something you want to go through, especially if you've got family who are, contentious. And even when you don't know when that's going to come up.
I agree.
Agree. And you don't want to take that risk.
Thank you.
Okay, 981-7200. Let's go to Ron. Hi, Ron. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to start with a joke.
Okay.
It's so cold. It's so cold out. I saw penguins flying south.
Oh. I love it.
That's good.
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Okay.
All right.
I have an employment question.
Okay.
I was working for a large trucking company, and I was fired for a false accusation of racism. And now it's going to arbitration, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to lose any rights or ability to possibly sue them for this or other actions, including a workman's comp claim.
Okay, let me just ask you, and I don't want to mention any names or any companies, but so you were falsely accused of, is it making racist comments to somebody?
Correct.
And are you, and were you terminated?
Yes.
Okay. And the person is now going to arbitration in an employment discrimination lawsuit?
No, it was a union based company. I was part of the union, and the union is now taking it to arbitration because the normal procedures didn't for deciding any claims or grievances.
Oh, okay. So the arbitration is your issue with it, with the company.
Correct.
Okay. So they're going to decide whether or not there was due process and the process was followed to terminate you, correct?
That's correct.
And do you have a lawyer, or is the union lawyer representing you?
There's a union lawyer that's representing me, and I wanted to know if it'd be a good idea for me to retain another attorney I've used previously for workman's comp, or if that was outside their specialty, and if there was a specific specialty for dealing with this.
So generally speaking, if you're a member of the union, they will provide you a lawyer. The lawyers range from being really good, and they know the ship, they know the rules on the ship, they know what they're doing, and they're prepared. There's some union lawyers, unfortunately, who are overworked and may not prepare very well, and so you get there, and they don't even know the facts of your case, and they don't try very hard. So you have to make the assessment as you sit here whether or not you've got the good lawyer or the bad lawyer. If you feel like you're not getting attention and you're not having this lawyer sit down and prepare, because an arbitration is a trial, and that lawyer should be sitting down with you and preparing your testimony and the cross-examination and all of the documentation. And if you don't feel he or she is doing that, then get your own lawyer and bring them on board. Okay. And maybe you have both of them. You know, maybe you get both of them to do that. So, yeah, you'll make it through that process. If you get reinstated, you'll probably be entitled to some back pay, I would imagine. And then you can assess whether or not there needs to be a lawsuit. But frankly, if the arbitration turns out and you're fired, you know, you really don't have a lawsuit because they've already determined that you're guilty of what happened. And it's probably not a good use of time to hire a lawyer to pursue that. If you have a workers' comp claim because you were injured on the job, you certainly can bring those claims. That has nothing to do with the discrimination part. I hope that answers your question. Is that pretty good?
Yeah, you did quite a bit, and okay. That's exactly why I was calling. I had a conference with the lawyer, and that's why I'm questionable about him.
Okay. So, all right, Ron.
Thank you for your time.
All
have
right.
a great night.
All right, good luck.
Another thing is a tip for staying warm in the cold is to dress in layers, but not overdress. People, instead of putting on two or three layers, go four, five, six. They overheat, they sweat, and then they lose the ability to insulate. So one or two layers, maybe three with the extreme cold, but not five, six, more than that.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Ron. That's good advice.
That's good.
About layers for lawyers. Okay, here we go. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls, 981-7200. We're here with John DeCoste, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back. It's Karen Conti here with John DeCoste. And John is here for moral support. To say moral support, I don't know if that's the right word.
I'm just here to listen.
You're giving me moral support and trying to answer all these good legal questions that everyone has. If you have a legal question about anything, family law, you know, January is the month where everybody wants to get a divorce. They've had it during the holidays. They're done with it, and they are turning over a new leaf. I can't tell you how many calls I get for divorces in January. It's the truth. And the laws have changed. So if you have a question about family law, divorces, child support, happy to talk to you about that. Breach of contract, estate planning, can try to touch on the topics as best I can. Let's go to Joe. Hi, Joe. Welcome to WGN.
Hello, how are you? Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I worked for a company, and I was not paid. It owes me like $3,900. I went to the labor board. Labor board says, well, yes, the money is owed you. He gave a certain time to pay me. But what he did was he dissolved the corporation and he started a new one. The labor board says they can't collect. What do I do?
Okay, did you go to the Illinois Department of Labor?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on hold because we got a little bit of an echo here, all right? And I'm going to answer your question. So if you're not paid from a job and you try the best that you can to try to get your employer to do that, he has to pay you on the next date of whenever the payroll is due. So if you leave the company and you normally get paid on the 15th, you should be paid on the 15th for all of the money that's owed to you. If it's not, he's in violation of the law. The best way to do it is not to hire a lawyer because it's probably going to cost you more than it's worth. But you go to the Illinois Department of Labor, the Wage Claim Division, and I think you can make these claims online now, and you fill out the paperwork and you tell them when you worked, if you have documentation to show proof of the fact that you worked or you're supposed to be paid and what your wages were supposed to be. You send that as well, and they do an investigation for free, which is very nice because they will come up with an assessment that says, yes, you should pay employer or no, you should not pay. In this case, they said, yes, employer, you should pay. Now he's dissolved. Okay, so now you have to probably go back to the Department of Labor and make a claim that this is what he did. My understanding of the law, and I know there's some probably whistles and bells to this, but he can't just do that. He can't just dissolve a company. He will have responsibility for the debts of that company unless a certain number of months or years go by. So my understanding, and you can email me if you'd like, but you may just be better off talking to the Illinois Department of Labor yourself and figuring out a way to file a claim to make sure that the principal, the owner, is tagged for those unpaid wages because you can't do what he did and get out of it. Okay? Hope that answers your question. It's amazing what employers do to get out of paying people. It's just the wrong thing to do. And by the way, if there are employers out there who aren't paying minimum wage or who aren't paying overtime, who aren't paying people on time, don't do it because there are awful penalties. There are attorney's fees that you might have to pay. I had a company who wasn't paying overtime for a 3-year period, and it turned out to be a huge multi-thousands of dollars of penalties and interest and all that kind of stuff. And you just don't want to go there. Follow the law. If you don't know the law, hire an employment lawyer for 2 hours to sit down and explain the law to you so you make sure that you're in compliance. Okay. All right. Let's go to Don. Hi, Don. Welcome to WGN.
Good evening, Sharon. Hi. Thank you for taking my call again.
Sure.
I got a question about open carry case that's been going on in the courts for a couple of years. I've been following called Young v. Hawaii. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but in July, the 9th district.
You know what? Hold on before you get into this. Ben told me you have a very specific question like this, and we're talking case law and statutes. I'm not very well versed in this area, What I'm going to do is I'm going to have you call me at my office, and I'm going to refer you to a lawyer who I know who it's all he does is gun rights. He's going to know the answer to your question because you're going to spend 5 minutes giving me the question, and I'm not going to know the answer.
I understand.
And they're very complicated, and the laws have changed lately. So I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to give you the email address. Okay, hold on. My email address is wgn@askkarenconti.com, or you can call me at 312-332-7800. If you email me, just give me the facts. Tell me where you are, like what county you're in, when the event happened, what it is you're looking for, what relief you want. Giving me the dates is helpful because sometimes too much time has passed, and you need to tell me where, because if I'm going to refer a lawyer to you, I want to make sure I can hopefully try to get you somebody closer to you in maybe the suburb where you live or if you're in the city. Ben, you had a question, didn't you, earlier?
I did. I was curious, with all the snow we're getting, what are the legalities on shoveling snow and getting it out of your drives and your sidewalks?
Yeah, Chicago has an ordinance that requires people who own property or tenants, even if you're a tenant, you have an obligation to clear snow from the sidewalks that are public, not necessarily the ones that are in the backyard, but the ones that are public that abut your property. So the issue is you have to make sure it's 5 feet wide, because 5 feet apparently is what you need to have a wheelchair go by. So it has to be 5 feet wide. And there are some timing issues. So if it snows from 7 in the morning to 7 at night, you have till 10 o'clock at night to shovel. If it snows from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., you have till 10 a.m. to shovel. So it's like a 3-hour after that 7 o'clock time period. And that's the time where you have to do that. Now, you can be fined, and people can call on you, and they can report you, and there could be fines. Some commercial fines can be $250 to $500 a day. I don't know that they always do that. I think they give you some leeway. But that's something that you are required to do by law. Now, the issue is what happens if someone falls? And so the question is, a lot of people don't want to go out and shovel because they feel like maybe they're going to make it worse. But you have civil immunity if you shovel at the walk. So if you go out and you don't do it perfectly, You're immune from liability. The laws want you to go out and try to shovel it.
You made the attempt.
You made the attempt, and it's and they're going to say, if you get sued, and usually your insurance carrier, homeowner's insurance carrier, will be called right away. You're going to call that person up, and you're going to say, I've got a claim, and they're going to come in, and their defense will be, did you go out and shovel? So you should probably take a picture to show that you shoveled, wow, you know, if someone were to be hurt on your property, and that should get you out of the lawsuit altogether, okay? But there's just one little twist to that, which is a weird one, and that is if you allow an unnatural accumulation of snow or ice to be on your sidewalk, then you can be liable. So this is something that if the snow just comes down and it's natural and you shovel and you try your best, no liability. But let's just say that you run water off of your roof, or you the snow is angled in a way that makes things run off and causes a wet and slippery problem, meaning you change the direction of the snow, or right, you change the direction of the ice or the water. And if you do that, then you can be liable. It's a very strange law. But just the bottom line is, you have to shovel from a municipal standpoint. In Chicago, all municipalities have different rules on that, so you might want to look that up and probably Google it. But that you should go out and shovel because it will prevent you from being sued unless it's in this very, very narrow area. Okay? Does that make sense? Are you a shoveler?
I am.
You're a shoveler?
Yeah. And I live in the burbs, so.
Do you know what?
Yeah.
I like shoveling.
I have a big snowblower, but I really like going out and getting it.
I do too.
I like starting it up, so it's always fun.
Yeah, there's something about, first of all, going out, it's like really quiet, you know, and of course I have like my fur coat on, which is really ridiculous. You know,
same here.
I don't even have...
Same here.
You don't have your Canadian goose?
I do.
It's risky to wear this, as we know.
That's right.
I was sitting at a restaurant yesterday, and these guys from like Denmark were sitting next to me, and they had the Canadian goose, and I said, you better watch it. You're in Chicago. People are going to like shoot you for that.
Yeah, take We've that had, tag like, off. Take
yeah,
the tag
take the
off.
Tag off. Yeah. We've had 6 people robbed for their Canadian goose things.
That's amazing.
It's like Air
Jordans. I didn't realize they were that much money.
Yeah.
I was kind of shocked. That's not in my wheelhouse, but
no.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Would you call them parkas? All right. I think they're parkas. I
think
don't
they
know.
Are parkas.
Again,
yeah.
Not cool.
Yeah.
She's legally blonde and brilliant. Karen Conti, attorney at law, is taking your legal questions right now. Call 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200.
You heard the guy. We're taking legal calls. 312-981-7200. If you have seen anything in the news, maybe you have a question about something you've read or you've seen, you have a question about legal issues, give me a call, 981-7200, or text me. John, you on break, you told me you have a question about something you saw in the news.
Well, the Roger Stone, the fact that they came to his house, and I think reading the story, it was a lot of force to come to his house because, he was indicted, correct?
Right, he was indicted.
He was indicted. Mm-hmm. So they come to the house and there's this force and probably overkill, to take him into custody. But is part of this, and I'm just guessing, is part of this probably to send a message to him? You know, like, hey, this is the government coming in.
Right.
Or is some of it like we're afraid he would get rid of something?
Okay, great question. And I was thinking about this, and I've had people, lawyers, talking to me about this because we're all a little surprised. You know, just from what we saw, and you know, I don't know exactly what the facts were, but apparently there were a number of people, they say around 29 FBI agents come right after 6 a.m., you know, so it's still dark out there. They're storming his home. They're wearing these body armor and the fatigues. There's 17 vehicles. They're pounding on the door. They've got assault rifles, and they're arresting him. Now, normally speaking, they do this, you're right, when either the person is dangerous,
okay,
we got a barricade situation, right. We got someone who's a terrorist, we got someone who's a domestic violence perpetrator, where we have to do that because we have to make sure that people are safe and they're going to stay safe. They're going to destroy evidence. I don't think either one of those was the case here.
Okay.
I mean, you know, they had a warrant and they searched the home after they arrested him, but I'm just not sure because the stuff that they had in the indictment was already in the indictment. It was all emails and things that they already had. So,
okay.
You know, maybe they were afraid of being destroyed, but how fast could someone destroy, you know, all of the emails in a computer? I don't know. So the question is, why were they doing it? Like,
well, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we're speculating. All the lawyer friends of mine are saying, you know, they do. They want to send a message. This guy wasn't cooperating. He was kind of flagrant. He kind of dismissed Mueller, didn't take it seriously.
Okay.
So, you know what? Mueller, who's very low key, you know, listen, he's not a flamboyant prosecutor, and he's not really a person to do this. You know, there are prosecutors who might want to kind of make a flash and do this kind of stuff. That's just not his style. But he was making a point. I think he was saying, this is serious, buddy. You know, if you're going to play this game and lie to us and obstruct justice and witness tamper, then you know what? We're going to treat you like the criminal that you are.
If that, instead of 29 people, if 4 people would have showed up, would they have had the same result? Would they have been able to go into the house?
Sure.
And start? Okay.
Sure. But here's how you normally do it.
Okay.
You call up. You know, he knew all along he was going to be indicted. He's been saying that to the press, I think I'm going to be indicted.
Okay.
And so what you do is the prosecutor will call up the lawyer, Karen Conti. Hi, Karen, I know you represent Roger Stone. You know what? We just indicted him. Will he turn himself in? We need to have him here before 6 a.m. on blah, blah, blah. And you say as the lawyer, sure, we'll have him turn himself in. So he gets all dressed up and we go and we turn him in and he gets fingerprinted, he gets charged, he gets mugshot, and it's done. That's what happens. That's the normal way it's done in a white collar situation. This obviously was a message that was being sent.
Okay.
And
which by the way, I don't have a problem with. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with the use of force in this situation.
I'm not gonna weigh in politically because there's no good that comes from weighing in politically.
Correct.
Okay. But I do have a slight problem with it because I don't like force being used when it's not necessary.
Right.
You know, if someone's pounding on my door and I don't know who they are and maybe it's not clear to me because I'm asleep and I have a gun, you know, I don't want to be shooting an FBI and I don't want the FBI to be in harm's way.
Good point.
You know, just don't take your guns unless you have to.
Right.
There was a way to do this. And so, again, you know, maybe we're going to find out more facts here that we don't know, that maybe there was something to protect. One of my texters here from the 773 says, Trump legal question about Trump's pal. What is the tampering with the witness part? I read the indictment, and the indictment has all of the charges have to do with lying. It's what they call a process crime, which you're hearing that term being used. A lot of people are asking me, what does that mean, a process crime? A process crime is defined as something like obstruction of justice, lying to the government, witness tampering. Those are the three process crimes, which means you're not being prosecuted for the actual crime. You're being prosecuted for interfering with the process, okay, the judicial process.
Oh, okay.
So that term is being used if you hear that. So the question is, when you read the indictment, what are we looking for? He didn't none of the things that he did, maybe the WikiLeaks and all that stuff, to the extent that he even got those WikiLeaks and took them or found them, that's not really part of it. What he's being prosecuted for is when questioned about it from the House Intelligence Committee, he lied. And there were pretty blatant lies because they lined up what the questions were, and then they lined up what his answers were, and then they took the emails that they found where it completely conflicted.
Oh, okay.
And it looks bad for him in the indictment. It's a pretty detailed indictment. And someone says, what is the witness tampering part? If you look at that indictment, you'll see that there was a witness, and I'm not sure they named the witness, but supposedly Roger Stone emailed him and threatened him and said, we're going to take away your dog. We're going to, you know, you think you're going to do this. It was kind of threatening. So I believe that that's the basis for the witness tampering count. And again, these things can be changed and monitored, and if there's other evidence down the line, they can edit and amend this indictment and add things, subtract things. But suffice to say, you know, this is, you know, 5 years for each count. I mean, he could conceivably do 35 years. He probably won't do more than five, or he might cooperate in some way. Who knows?
Okay.
You know, you just don't know. But anyway, yeah, that's something that we're all talking about, and I think that it's very unusual to see a white-collar criminal be apprehended in his home in that manner. It's just not done. Give us a call here, 981-7200, 981-7200. Let's see. You know what I want to talk a little bit about? How much time do we have, Ben? We don't have any time. No? A couple minutes. You know what I want to talk about when we come back? I'll take a break a little bit early, but I want to talk about this Jamie Kloss case. This is the woman who was a 13-year-old girl who was abducted from her home in northwest Wisconsin after her parents were brutally murdered, and she was kept by a guy and was then for 2 months and then was found and she was rescued. And it's about the reward that was offered and what happened with the reward. And a lot of people have questions about, are rewards a legally binding contract? If someone offers a reward, are they then legally obligated to give it out? And what dictates the way that the reward would be distributed? So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that. But I'm hoping you have some more legal questions, 981-7200. And you can text me at that 981-7200. Again, at the office, WGN at AskKarenConti.com. Welcome back. It's Karen Conti here with John DeCoste. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for asking me. You were very kind.
It's fun.
I've had a lot of fun. It was fun.
I like talking to you better than talking to myself. I guess I'm talking to the listeners, but it's nice to have a warm body here. I haven't touched you to see if you're warm.
No, we're across. Let me clarify. We're across the table.
HR.
That's right.
Okay, we got some textures. Let's see. Plastic bags around your feet inside your boots keep your feet warmer and drier. It works. Let your funny hang out. Loving it.
That's good. And
I'm being a little funnier today. You know why? Because you're sitting here.
That's good.
It's hard to be funny by yourself.
I know.
You know, it's like if a tree falls in the forest. Yes. Like if you're funny by yourself, I don't know if anyone's laughing.
That's a good point. Good point.
But I do. Did you ever try that with bags?
I have. Somebody recommended that to me about 3 years ago, and I did it. And I'm like, wow, it does make a difference. I also went to a Bears game that way.
Oh.
And that worked very well.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, nobody could see them, so it's no big deal. And I have to pay a tax.
You have to pay a tax.
Don't people in Chicago have to pay a tax use the...
I have to tell you, do you hate... That is the thing I hate the very most. Today I went to 7-Eleven to get something. I had to go out there. I dragged the bags there with me. I'm like... This is just, I don't want to pay, what is it, 7 cents?
I think it's, yes.
Who cares, right? But it's just the whole point is so wrong.
And I get it if you're going grocery, you know, I'm going to buy a lot of stuff, so I'll bring my own bags because I know that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But you're going to one place.
Yeah.
And you're just, I walked out of Walgreens, I'll just pay the seven.
Especially when you buy your dirty magazines, John, then, you know, you do have to have a bag.
Karen, we were not supposed to talk about this. This was off the air.
It was attorney-client privilege, right?
Wow. I'm going to sue. How about that?
Oh, okay. We can do that later. Okay, so we're talking about rewards. We're talking about the 13-year-old Jamie Kloss. It was such a good ending to the story, I guess. I mean, her parents were dead, but that's, you know, she was found. She was abducted from her northwest Wisconsin home. Her parents were shot and killed, and there was just a creepy guy who saw her and wanted to abduct her and put her in his house for 2 months. And anyway, in the meantime, there were two rewards that were offered. One was from Jenny O. Turkey Store, which was a store where her parents worked.
Right.
So they put out a $25,000 reward leading to the location of the girl. And I believe the FBI also put out a $25,000 reward. Now, the FBI does not discuss the reward with the public, apparently. They took the position that we don't discuss it. We're going to deal with the reward on our own, and we're not going to make an announcement. But Jenny O, the company, announced that the reward is going to Jamie, the girl herself, because she apparently was smart enough to get away from her captor and got out there and basically saved herself. And nicely, the neighbor who found her and,
right,
you know, helped her, declined to take the reward, which was a very nice thing, saying, you know what, she's the hero here. I'm not the hero. She's the one who got out. She's the one who was brave. And so she's getting the reward. So the question is, you know, and these things get sued on all the time. People put out rewards, and people say, is that really a binding contract? And it is. So most of the time when you have a contract with somebody, like I say, John, you know, you're going to perform at my comedy club, and you're going to perform for a half an hour, and for that I'm going to pay you the kingly sum of $100, and it's a contract. So you come and you do it, and
no, I would have said no. Let me just clarify. Okay. $100.
Cheapskate. Yes. Okay. $200. $200.
Okay, I'll do it. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Good negotiator. So that's a contract, because you're giving something and I'm giving something. It's called consideration. It's kind of both of us have an obligation. Mutual promises, meeting of the mind. It's a binding contract, an offer and an acceptance. In the case of a reward, and it doesn't have to be in writing. So, for instance, if you get in a cab, and you say, take me to the WGN studios at 303 East Wacker, and the cab driver takes you there, you have to pay him. It's an implied contract that when you get into a cab, there's an agreement and a meeting of the minds that you're going to pay the fare that's on the little meter. So, again, it doesn't have to be in writing, but it has to be a meeting of the minds. So, in the instance of a reward, you are offering, someone is offering, hey, if you do something that is going to lead to the arrest or the location of this little girl, we are going to give you this money. That means if you accept that, you then go look for the little girl and you find the little girl, then the meeting of the minds happens, and then there's a contract. And that binding contract requires that the person who makes that offer pay. So it's a little bit different than a regular contract, but it's the same thing as a contract for sale of goods or anything else like that.
You know, TV, when they had the FBI, the 10 most wanted or whatever, this person is missing, and they go, this is the reward. But I'm sure several people would have called and said, or let's just say several people called and said, oh, I saw this person at here and there. How do you whittle it down to one person, or is that even an issue?
Yeah, no. And the question is, like, who do you give it to?
Right.
How does that determine? And this is where lawsuits get filed, because you're right. Sometimes it's three or four people who lead to the arrest of the person, and maybe three different clues or three what?
Right.
So a lot of times the rewards will say in small print, we reserve the Jenny O or whatever the company is. We reserve the right to determine to whom reward goes, based upon, and they, you might say, based upon fairness or whatever, or you might have something in there, and that we reserve the right to do that. So, in that case, you would just follow, you know, whatever the wording was in that contract, in the reward. And in that case, you might say, to be fair, I'm going to split it to three people. And people could sue over it. But generally speaking, the person who offers the reward is going to be determinative of who gets it, as long as it's fair, as long as it's not something that, you know, is grossly unfair to not give it to somebody.
Right. So, I've always wondered about that, because I have seen in my neighborhood, you will see a sign on a tree that says, lost dog, you know, $500 if returned or whatever. And I'm like, wow, that's, you know, I understand that. I would love, we have two dogs. I would love to have our dog back, but I didn't know I was obligated to really pay them. you know, I didn't know if that was, or they could come up and say, well, it wasn't 500, I'll give you three or something. But
yeah, you could. Okay. Especially if you've taken action to go look for the dog. So, right. So meaning that you, based upon that promise, you changed your situation or your position, meaning you went out and you went out in the cold and it's 19 below zero and you're looking for the dog and you find the dog, you know, listen, you did something in furtherance of that,
right,
of that promise. And so you reasonably relied upon those words before you went out and did,
right,
that. So, yeah, from a legal standpoint,
cool,
it is. Okay, so we got some other questions here about Jamie. What is this about not changing the murdered kidnapper charging so the details of her time with them won't be made public? Love you guys. Maybe I'm a little obsessed with John. Smiley face. This is from Laura. Ooh, Laura, you're obsessed with John. Yeah, I am too. I agree with you. Now, I don't know, the details of the time won't be made public. My guess is, you know, there may be something that happened to her in those 2 month period that is probably a horrible thing. And, right, you know, out of respect for the fact that she's 13, they may not be announcing that. You know, we'll probably know at some point, but you're right. That hasn't been talked about, and that generally doesn't surprise me because that's a confidential thing, and she's underage.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so I live in a townhouse and have an association. They shovel after it snows. I live in McHenry County, so I'm not able to. I don't know what you're not able to do. So the association, I guess I'm not sure what they're asking here. I don't see the end of it. Shoveling is the best way to burn calories. I want to shovel. I love snow, and I love shoveling the snow. I don't know. I don't know. Then the comment on the Brian Cranston situation was that, in this example, Cranston should not have been in Breaking Bad because he was not dying of cancer.
Oh, good point.
You know
that's
what?
Yeah, right. That's
exactly.
A good point.
Yeah, so you take right. it to the illogical extreme. What else?
Is that woman asking, because there is an association and they remove the snow, she enjoys removing the snow, so she wants to do it even though it's paid for through their association?
I don't.
Doesn't say.
I live in a townhouse and have an association. They shovel after it snows. So I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, I guess she, you know, they're supposed to take care of that. I would assume that they could tell her, no, you can't do that because this is what we do. You know, we have to do this the right way. You can't just go take this upon yourself to do it. You know.
Yeah, I guess. But you still have to, if they're not time frame wise, if they're not there when you need to get to your car, what stops you from...
Out of necessity,
yeah.
You have to do that. Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. And the other thing, though, is that civil liability will not attach if you don't have that obligation.
Right.
So, you know, to the extent that you wait and have them do it, it's probably a safer thing to do. But you're right. There's going to be a time where they're not going to be out there as quickly as you would like. Let's see. I've got some texters from this... actually emails from this week that I'm going to go to. There's a question about parking lots. A lot of people have accidents in parking lots, and especially when it's snowy like this and people can't see, or maybe they have not brushing off their windshields and the like. It seems to be a lot of them. So the question is, drivers leaving a parking space have to yield to other oncoming traffic. So when you're backing out, you're going to be liable if you hit someone, because you don't have the right of way. People going down the aisles and the rows, they have the right of way. You're the one who has to watch out for the people who are going through there. So you must wait till all traffic goes through before you reverse and you pull out of the parking lot. So if you are driving your vehicle and you collide with a parked car, obviously you're going to be responsible no matter what. No matter if the car is parked in a bad place. Some people say, hey, they were parked on the line, and so I hit them. Well, no, you shouldn't have hit them.
Right.
You should have parked somewhere else. And you have to obey all of the traffic signs. So If you happen to open your door and you hit another car, obviously you're responsible for that damage. And the best thing to do if you're involved in an accident and, you know, you're going to call your insurance carrier, and your insurance carrier is going to come out and it's going to help you with it and make, you know, either settle the claim with the person who you damaged, whose car you damaged, or if there's a lawsuit, they represent you in that. A lot of people don't know. It's funny, they get in an accident and they don't realize that they have to call their insurance carrier. That's what they're for, you know, or they're going to court and they haven't talked to their insurance carrier. No, call your insurance carrier. You can call either your agent, who will then know who to put you in touch with, the claims division, or write on your policy and on your probably on your statement, there's a name and a number for someone who is on the claims department. And you're going to put that, maybe put that somewhere important, that in your important documents, so you know exactly who to call if there is an incident. But that's something you should do right away, because if you don't do it right away, the insurance carrier can deny your claim. So all those are good things. Okay, we got one break to get in, and we're going to take that now. Should we take it now, Ben? You know what? I want to thank you for joining us, John. Two hours just kind of flew by.
You are very kind. And I just wanted to tell you, it is so cold that I put an ice cube in my mouth and sucked on it, and it got bigger.
That was the best one yet. You waited 2 hours to tell me that one.